crab cakes and baseball. That's what Maryland does.
Welcome to Let's Get To, the baseball show from the fan's perspective. Now here's your host, James Christopher.
And welcome to Let's Get To. I'm your host, James Christopher, and happy Hanukkah. As you can tell, I'm wearing my Hanukkah sweater. We have some fun Hanukkah stuff coming up for you in the episode. But seriously, happy Hanukkah to all of our friends and fans out there who celebrate this amazing 8 days. The celebration of the oil not running out. And it's supposed to last one night, but it lasted eight. And so again, happy Hanukkah to everybody out there. Special shout out to our friends, David and Lindsay. So happy Hanukkah to you guys. And I thought I would bring a Hanukkah gift in this episode, and I came up with eight ways that I would fix Major League Baseball. And no, not necessarily fire Rob Manfred. That's not like one through eight, because, you know, I'm old enough now to have lived through a lot of baseball history, and a commissioner's a commissioner, a commissioner. We hated Selig. We hate Manfred. They're interchangeable. So while the first one might not be fire Rob Manfred, it does deal with Robbie, and that is baseball has to market itself, and by baseball I mean Major League Baseball, has to market itself as a national brand. And it's something that we have talked about on this show a lot, that they treat it like the Yankees, Red Sox, and Dodgers, and then 27 other clubs. Sometimes the Cubs get lunched in there, so it's, you know, 26 other clubs. But something hit me during the World Series, and Manfred was asked about the tomahawk chop. And he said, I don't get into that. Baseball is a regional game, and blah, 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 blah. He basically said what we've been saying this whole time, that they don't actually market the league as a league like the NFL does. And the NFL is going to come up a lot in this, because they are probably the best league running as far as marketing itself and being successful. The NFL rotates through its top brands. You get to see everyone. It is not just, you know, Cowboys and Steelers and Patriots and then everyone else, right? It is, you get to know every single player in that league with the way they handle their TV broadcasts, with the way they handle their national media. When we end up with World Series, like in 2019 when it was Astros Nationals, it was one of the worst watched World Series in history. In part because nobody knew who the Nationals were. Because Major League Baseball made no effort to promote any of those other teams. And so if baseball really wants to survive, and look, I understand ESPN and Fox, they're going to put on the Red Sox and the Yankees and the Dodgers because TV networks are dealing with short-term windows where they have to pay back billions of dollars in TV contracts that they signed to get the rights to those leagues. It's not up to them. Major League Baseball, the next time they negotiate these things, needs to make a point of having more teams seen nationally so that way players, fans can learn about those players. The other thing they need to do is do what they do on YouTube. When you're showing maybe teams that not everybody knows, you need to have the color guys from both teams on that broadcast if it's a national broadcast. That way, I get to hear about, you know, this 26th player and how he's been scrapping in the minor leagues, all these things that endear ourselves to our home teams when we watch them. Now, if you're marketing this nationally and you're using some of your regional experts to do it, you're educating the entire country and the entire baseball fan base on some of these players. And so, number one, MLB has to see itself more as a national brand. Number two, and this is the one that's going to upset everyone. All my Yankee fans are about to get mad at me. Salary cap. The NFL has a salary cap. I think the NHL has a salary cap. The NFL has a salary cap, and it's the biggest brand going in sports, right? It is, and here's the thing. I'm not a 20-year-old baseball fan. I am a 45-year-old baseball fan, which makes me a 45-year-old NFL fan and a 45-year-old Cowboys fan, the Yankees of football. I know that had the salary cap not been a thing, Jerry Jones would still be buying Super Bowls, probably. Because the salary cap came into effect in that time period. When somebody would get hurt, we'd just get Deion Sanders. Somebody would get hurt, we'd get Rocket Ishmael. Like, Jerry Jones was throwing money around because he had the money to throw around. The NFL, Jerry Jones included, realized that the strong benefit to the league was parity, was making sure teams were on an equal footing. And so that was a big, and I understand, look, and this is when I talk about stuff, I always branch off into what the counter argument will be. I understand that owners are also greedy and shit. Like, I'm not, that's not lost on me. But the end result has been that the Cowboys haven't won a Super Bowl in 25 years. I think largely due to Jerry Jones not being a football guy, but being a money guy, and now money doesn't matter as much. But the NFL isn't hurting, even though its premier brand hasn't won a Super Bowl in 25 years. Think about that. The premier brand in the NFL hasn't won a championship in 25 years, and the league isn't hurting at all. The MLB's premier brand hasn't won a World Series in like 11 or 12 years, and they're crying how much money they don't have. Why is that? Because the two points, one and two, work together. So yeah, you got to have a salary cap. You have to make it where teams are on a more even footing when it comes to the financial aspects of the game. And I understand that small teams and low budget teams have won World Series. We're going to get to the playoffs in a minute. But the fact is, the NFL has a salary cap. The fact that MLB doesn't is ridiculous. The other thing the MLB needs, number three, is a salary floor. Now, before I get to a salary floor, I do want to talk about this latest tendency from really big budget teams and the media that cover those teams talking about how much they hate tanking and how tanking is the worst thing. Now, listen, you have to understand the economics in baseball are so unfair because there's no cap. Because there's it's not as shared as it is in the NFL, that some teams simply cannot afford to throw good money after bad. And I understand that there are teams that look like they're not trying to win. The Oakland Athletics, there's no excuse for them to only spend $31, $35 million on a team, right? Baltimore, you've been trying to rebuild long enough. But I don't have an issue where what to do what the Astros did, where they took 3 years and tore it down, or what the Royals have done, because by the way, they all resulted in World Series championships. And sometimes you have to acknowledge the fact that if your house's foundation breaks, you have to fix it. And that usually means remodeling the whole thing. The caveat to be what I would do in this situation is if a team was like, listen, we have to tear things down, I would allow that to happen for a certain amount of time, 3 years maybe. And then you start taxing them for not having a minimum, not reaching your minimum threshold of a payroll. But I do think that we have to have a minimum payroll because the game is better if every single fan base feels like their team is eventually trying to win. So I want a salary cap and I want a salary floor. Number four, TV blackouts. Too many people pay for too many streaming services and too many cable networks and still can't see their local teams. The fact that I can't just buy the MLB package and watch Astros games in Austin, Texas is ridiculous. It's not like, oh, I can't watch it, so I'm just going to haul 3 hours down to the ballpark and watch the game. The TV situation is completely broken, and MLB needs to jump into the 21st century and start to figure out how they can become much more available to their fan base across the country, because every single fan base has the same gripe when they can't watch their local team. Number five, we talk about pace of play all the time, but recognize the problem. The pace of play problem isn't back when we used to not have a three batter minimum and you could use lefty specialists. That's not the issue, right? In fact, they've proven that innings are now going longer because you're getting guys who can't get righties out and they're getting knocked all over the ballpark. And that's why you have offense increases time. The problem is the style of baseball that we're playing. This one true outcome thing where everything is a strikeout, a walk, or a home run. We need to find a way, and there are people smarter than me to discuss this, but we need to find a way to get baseball back to what it was in the 90s, when there was more running, when there was more hit and run, stuff like that, action on the base paths. Fans are into the game more. You're not just sitting around waiting for a ball to get to go over the fence. I miss those days when you didn't know if you were going to see a guy steal second or not. If you wouldn't see guys try to poke holes through the defense and try to get guys in motion. I miss that style of baseball. It was simply a lot more fun. Number six, expansion. You have to expand the leagues. If nothing more than to get the Astros out of the AL West. And what I mean by that is, listen, if you expand to 32 and you redraw all the divisions, you can do a divisions with the Astros and, you know, the Rangers and, just off the top of my head, Cardinals and Royals. I know they would never separate Cardinals and Cubs. I get that. But the idea of all the games, or the majority of your games, in the same time zone, easier for fans to get to if they want to go to road trips, things like that. You have to expand it and make it 32, and then that way you can have a truly balanced schedule. I think everything just works when we get to 32. I think we will. I think once the Oakland moves to Vegas and we figure out what's going on with Tampa, then expansion, one on the West Coast, one in the sort of Central East time zones, will happen. I just hope it happens sooner than later. Number seven, playoffs. That Jim Mora, right? Is that Jim Mora? I don't remember. Playoffs. Yeah, I'm talking about playoffs. So I heard an interesting bit a while back, and it was that baseball has the least percentage of playoff games to regular season games. And no, I'm not talking about expanding the playoffs, at least not until you've expanded the whole league. But we can argue that, let's take the World Series in 2017, 2019, and 2021. 2017, the Dodgers were probably the better team. Stop with the sign-stealing stuff, because smarter people than you watching or me talking have proven that the sign-stealing scandal did not help them beat the Dodgers in that World Series. But the Dodgers were probably the better team. 2019, the Astros were probably the better team. 2021, the Astros were probably the better team than the Braves. And if you measure it over 162-game season, that bears out. Baseball is a marathon. However, its playoffs become a sprint. And again, I'm not for expanding rounds, but what I would at least do is, I thought one of the best things in the pandemic was to have the wild card game be three games. You don't have to travel. You can do all three at one spot, but it's such a crapshoot to reduce an entire baseball season to one game. It's out of the nature of the sport. Now, I would be a fan of making the World Series nine games again and the CS, but I know some people would roll their eyes at that, but I would make the divisional round a seven-game series again, and I would get rid of the 2-3-2 format. I think the 2-3-2 format actually reduces the home field advantage, if there is one in baseball, and I know members of my show have said there isn't, but you play for it for a reason, right? So whether it works or not, I don't know. But I would get rid of the 2-3-2 format, and I would look at expanding the DS, because, again, make it more like the regular season. You can get fluky in a DS, and I think that that's also, I think, shown, again, in sort of the Nationals beating the Dodgers in 2019. I don't think the Nationals were a better team than the Dodgers. They got hot at the right time, and I would rather see a World Series and an LCS reflective of who was good in the regular season as opposed to who got hot at any given minute. And number eight, in some ways, this is the one I'm the most fired up about. Quit wearing white before or after Labor Day. Now, we're going to set the Yankees aside and the Dodgers aside, because those uniforms are classic. But in just about every other situation, every other team in the MLB's best uniform set is the one where they're wearing the jersey of their primary color. The Astros blue or the Astros orange. The Mariners, the sea green thing that they wear. The Cardinals with their baby blue thing. I think we need to get away from these dull white jerseys that are worn more often than not, and bring a little bit of color to baseball. If you think about the NFL, again, here's the NFL. Usually the road team wears white, and then you have a colorful jersey set going on for the home team. You have these jerseys already. wear them more. Give a little color to the uniform. And I think, I don't know, for me as a sort of a uniform nerd, I would love to see much more color in baseball than just home for five, home whites for five games and then road grays. And then only getting to see the blue and the orange on, you know, a Friday and a Sunday here and there. So quit wearing white after Labor Day or before Labor Day. So that is my rant. That is how I would fix baseball. We have a great show coming for you to do, including Jess Canastris here to talk a little Hanukkah and the champion Charleston River Dogs. So stay with us.
Put on your yarmulke. Here comes Hanukkah. So much Hanukkah.
Let's Get To presents the Minor League Mind with Jess Canaster.
So we are excited to be back. It's another episode of Let's Get To, and Hanukkah is a little earlier this year, so we're going to do a Hanukkah segment now, and we're excited to have Jess Canaster back on. Jess, happy Hanukkah. How's it going?
Thank you. It's going well. Hanukkah, I think growing up, people ask me when Hanukkah is, and it is very much, I have all the Google to thank, because I don't remember. I can't keep track. The 354-day Jewish calendar. It throws you for loops sometimes. And then if it's not bad enough that the days are different every year on our calendar, the holidays start at night. So it just confuses the hell out of everybody who doesn't know any better. It's like, oh, today's the first day of Hanukkah. So enjoy the first night. No, actually the first night was last night. Today's the first day, because why make it easy? So.
It's always a struggle, isn't it? It's just,
it is. And then it's obviously the whole, you know, people mean well when they say, oh, Christmas, it means so much to me and my family. I can only imagine what Hanukkah means to you as a Jewish person. It's like, yeah, it's, you know, the fourth most important holiday. Like, what? But it's Christmas, but for Jews, sort of. We have potato pancakes. That's what we do.
Well, what's interesting about that, though, is liturgically, from a Catholic perspective, Christmas isn't the most important. Like, it's Easter. I think socially and sort of almost secularly, you know, it's because I even have Jewish friends who have a great time on Christmas because they just like the idea of celebrating things. Like, it's very different. But it is weird.
We just need to find a way to get Mariah Carey to record a song for Easter. And I think the whole thing will take off.
Yeah, we need Mariah and Stevie Wonder. And can we get Wham back together? Not without an exorcist. You can't. So you guys are now in Harrisburg this year. This will be the first Hanukkah you're there. Is it going to be different, though, not being near family for you guys?
A little. The way we usually celebrate our Hanukkah, we do a latke and brisket dinner. My wife cooks all that up. And I just make sure that I'm a chief taste tester when she'll let me. So this year, you know, obviously it's a little bit different. We have begun to integrate ourselves into the Jewish community here in Harrisburg. Not very much so, but we do have acquaintances, and I've always wanted to go into the store right before Hanukkah and buy a 10-pound bag of the comically large 10-pound bags of potatoes. And every year I am not allowed to do that. And instead I pick out three or four potatoes, because usually Lindsay's, my wife, is just cooking for us. But this year we are going to have some friends over. So 10-pound sack of potatoes will be finally in my shopping cart for the first time. And I'm quite excited about that. Maybe almost as much as then eating 10 pounds worth of vodkas.
Well, and even as a Goya, is that what I would be called?
Goyim.
I definitely find time. There is a really good burger place called Jew Boy, but they also do latkes and stuff. So we order those from them every year, and we have them because of the pandemic, we haven't been able to do our traditional Hanukkah stuff with our best friends. But one of our traditions on Hanukkah now is that we talk baseball. And last year you famously built the all Jewish baseball team, which was one of our more popular segments. So what do you have in store for us today?
Also, kind of touching on baseball, which is a big holiday, or a holiday, baseball is big on numbers, and you know, the numbers that exist throughout baseball, whether they be statistics or innings or jersey numbers, that's all revered and all written down. I mean, everything in baseball is written down. And the Jewish faith has a lot of symbolism with numbers too. The number 7 and the number 18 are two of the more important numbers in the Jewish faith. This is the Hebrew word for life. It's also the way numbers are written out are by letters. And this also spells out the number 18. So the numbers are important in both Judaism and baseball. And Hanukkah, obviously, there's 8 nights. And so kind of ran with that and came up with the best players to wear the number 8 in baseball.
Oh, let's do it.
So these are
now, real quick. Are you starting with the best number 8? Are you counting down?
I would say these are in no real specific order. Obviously, there's some recency bias because a lot of these guys, well, first off, surprisingly, not as many people wore the number 8 and had a Hall of Fame level career. The majority of last year's list, those guys are all Hall of Famers. Your Hank Greenbergs and Sandy Koufaxes, those are Hall of Famers. All of these guys are Hall of Famers, but there are only 6 guys in the Major League Baseball or in the Baseball Hall of Fame who wore the number 8, at least for the majority of their careers.
I have another number 8 for you before we start that might give you some flashbacks as a San Francisco 49ers fan.
I do have a well, it's washed out. But there is a non-MLB list. Troy Aikman was the best I could come up with because I feel like not everybody respects the best quarterback in Jacksonville Jaguars history, Mark Brunell. He was my favorite to play in Madden the year that the Jaguars came into the league. Other non-Major League Baseball best 8s, Alexander Ovechkin, who's the 4th leading goal scorer all time in NHL history and still on his way up. Chris Wondolowski of the San Jose Earthquakes. He just retired. He has the all-time record for goals scored in MLS with 171, more than almost 30 clear of second place, and a record that seems like it'll be that way for a while. And of course, Kobe Bryant, who wore 24 and 8 throughout his career, but is known pretty well for both of those. And obviously all the accolades that Kobe Bryant amassed in his NBA career. Honorable baseball mentions, guys that I thought of and then verified on numbers. A lot of catchers, surprisingly.
Okay.
Javi Lopez, Gary Gaetti, Bob Boone, all catchers. And then there are a couple more on the list too. Ryan Braun, because this is a Jewish curated list. So he gets the distinction of being on both last year's and this year's lists.
Love it.
Hunter Pence, I don't know if he's an all-time great, but certainly has some good relevance right now as a recently retired multiple-time World Series winner and multiple-time All-Star.
Who played for both of our clubs.
Played for both the Astros and the Giants. Mark Loretta, another former Astro.
Mm-hmm.
Also spent time with the Padres and bounced around a little bit. And even though he wore 88 for some of his career, I included him, Albert Bell.
Okay.
Because Albert Bell's fun. I enjoyed him. I enjoyed watching him as a kid because he was this era's let the kids play before that was a thing.
Before that was a thing. Okay.
All right. So on to the list itself. Just because we're talking about catchers, we'll start behind home plate. Yogi Berra. Great number 8. One of 2 number 8s to be retired by the Yankees, which... with Mariano Rivera having 42 retired by the Yankees, that gives them a second number to be retired for 2 guys. The other guy being Bill Dickey, who played in the 1950s or 1940s. He was a Hall of Famer, inducted in 1954, 11-time All-Star. He also was a player manager for a year for the Yankees in the 1940s. Gary Carter.
Oh, great. Yeah.
Hall of Famer. 2003, 11-time All-Star, 3-time Gold Glove winner. All of these guys, like I said, are Hall of Famers. So that makes it easier to put them up there. So we have Berra, we have Gary Carter, we have Bill Dickey. Moving around the infield, middle infield, could not find any Hall of Fame number 8 corner infielders. Joe Morgan, Hall of Famer, 1990, spent his career with the Reds, 10-time All-Star. two-time MVP, other side of second base, the Iron Man himself, Cal Ripken Jr. All of his numbers. Again,
needs almost no introduction, right? Cal Ripken Jr. Saved baseball.
Saved baseball. And in this area where we're only about 2 hours or an hour and a half north of Baltimore, there are plenty of Orioles fans in this area. So that is a jersey I usually see here at the ballpark in Harrisburg. Once every few games or so, something Cal Ripken of some kind, a jersey or a t-shirt. So obviously still some relevance. And then into the outfield, three guys, one who played in the organization that is represented here, but did not play in Harrisburg, Andre Dawson.
Oh, that's like Jessica's favorite all-time ball player. Jessica. Yeah.
All the time he spent with the Montreal Expos, Hall of Famer 2010, 438 homers. Around the rest of the outfield, Willie Stargell, who mm-hmm. also has some popularity since we're 3.5 hours from Pittsburgh here. Hall of Famer 1988, won the World Series with the Pirates, was the MVP of that World Series in 1979. And then Carlos Stremski, Boston. Doesn't really have any significance here. Nobody likes the Red Sox here. If anybody likes any of the AL East teams, like I said, it's either Baltimore or the Yankees. There are no Red Sox fans here. But Carlos Stremski, 18 times All-Star, AL MVP, inducted to the Hall of Fame in 1989. So one more time down the list, Barra, Carter, Dickey, all catchers, Joe Morgan, Cal Ripken Jr., to represent the infield. I mean, those two guys, they're good enough defensively. You could just put one on either side of second base and you're set. You don't need a first baseman or a third baseman because
you've got those guys.
We're making it up as we go along. And outfield, Willie Stargell, Carlos Stremski, and Andre Dawson. Those are the eights. I don't want to say the crazy eights because that's probably copyrighted, but
and I'm already dealing with a little bit of that. Before we let you go, then let's just take we'll take off our yarmulkes, I guess, not our hats, and let's look at down the road. You're as smart a baseball guy as I know. What's your best guess on the CBA? Have you thought much about that? I mean, do you think there's a chance that there's no baseball next year? You know, Andy, Tom Cheston and I well enough to know that we are both pretty doom and gloom guys. We don't think baseball will happen until 2023. What do you think?
I think we got a glimpse of what this CBA negotiation was going to look like and what each side thinks of the possibility of no baseball or delayed baseball based on, we got that glimpse in the spring and summer of 2020 with all the negotiations that took place, to get a baseball season off the ground in the midst of a global pandemic, pre-vaccine. And so I think there is too much at stake. I think it revealed a little bit because obviously the players without playing baseball, they don't make money. I mean, I'm sure they can all find jobs elsewhere, but they have jobs currently, and that is to play baseball. Take that away from them, and they have, at least immediately, they have nothing. Take baseball teams away from owners, and at least the outward impression is the owners, they have millions and billions of dollars, potentially other teams that they own, like the Red Sox looking at purchasing the Pittsburgh Penguins. They have plenty of other avenues to make money, but I think what 2020 showed is that there is a point in which the owners will break and want there to be baseball because they may not need as much to make money because they make they make a lot of money from TV contracts alone. They played a whole season or played a lot of a season without fans and they did fine. So I think it's not the ticket revenue, but it's TV revenue And if there's not baseball, then there's no TV revenue. And I think the owners need that money more than even the most pessimistic of people can would think that they cannot survive without no baseball. I would not be surprised to see a delay, although the fact that the contract bargaining agreement, the collective bargaining agreement, expires in a couple weeks here, early December, that gives them the entirety of the offseason to try and figure it out, as opposed to what feels like in the past, where there have been work stoppages and delayed baseball seasons and whatnot, because the negotiations don't seem to start until February or March. And it may be that that's when the heat of it comes, but I have a feeling that it'll only be helped. Short answer, I think there will be baseball, Major League Baseball in 2022. It could be delayed. I think that's a legitimate possibility, but I don't think it's a completely scrapped season. And I don't think we're going to have to relearn the rosters of the Korea baseball organization. Although I will. I happily will if I need to. And then, of course, there's the whole story of what would happen if there's no major league season here in Harrisburg. The majority of our players, if not all of our players for 2022, are not going to be on the 40-man roster. So they are not major league. They are paid by the Washington Nationals.
Yeah,
but so they are not
largely the minors should be unaffected. In fact, it might even put a, you know, I remember in 94, they put some minor league games on TV. So it might actually boost the minor league baseball awareness if it happens.
Well, good. We just upgraded our stuff in our control room so that we can output all of our video content in high definition. So we're ready. Bring it on.
Bring it on. Jess, first of all, I just want to let you know, thank you again so much for being a big part of the show. And I know you're not on as much as you, it's a good reason you're not as much as you want, because you work for a minor league baseball team, but you're always part of the team. And just a happy Hanukkah to you and Lindsay.
Thank you. I'm joyed to every time I think about it, that you walked into the control room that I happen to be working in, the Casablanca, but not quite slash anywhere near romantic.
of all the gin control rooms in all the world.
Of all the baseball stadiums in West Texas,
he walked into mine.
So, but no, it's a joy to talk about baseball. Baseball is something that is so universally loved, but also I love baseball because it is loved for so many different reasons, and so many people have a different reason than the person next to them as to why they like baseball. And certainly as somebody who works in the industry, and I work in the entertainment side of baseball, but I don't work in the baseball entertainment side of baseball. I am happy for there to be a whole different reason why people might enjoy coming to the ball games. And it makes it more fun. We make memories in the baseball industry in one way or the other. I'm not going to hit a ball 400 feet, but I will show that on the video board.
Well, and the fun thing is coming up right after this segment is the coverage of our trip to Southern Maryland. So again, Jess, thanks a lot. You guys have a happy Hanukkah.
Thank you. Enjoy the first 8 nights of Hanukkah. And then I think Christmas this year is the 32nd night of Hanukkah. So an early happy 32nd night of Hanukkah to you.
From the bleachers, the Let's Get To Game of the Week.
The Let's Get To team headed east to Southern Maryland for our friends, the Blue Crabs. But before we get to baseball, the movie nerd in me had to check out Georgetown to see the famous steps that Father Damien Karas threw himself down in The Exorcist. This horror geek was happy. But we were here for Blue Crabs baseball, and for Jess Canaster and I, that meant a trip to Regency Furniture Stadium. What lies inside is one of the best indie ballparks we've been to, and all of baseball, it is simply put, pristine. I love the natural surface, avoiding the turf fields you often see at indie ballparks. And it's a true ballpark with a 360-degree walkway around the park, a wide-open concourse with lots of great spots to sit and catch the game, and amazing sightlines. I love the handheld scoreboard. It's such a classic look for a sport overrun by ribbon boards and high definition this or that. What makes this place pop is how detailed the Blue Crab's branding is and how pervasive it is throughout the whole ballpark. It shows up on chairs, umbrellas, really all over the stadium. This is now the second time we've seen old school lifeguard chairs in the outfield, and we love them now as much as we did then. They have a great club area which doubles as an awesome event space. While we were there, breast cancer survivors were meeting and sharing. It was pretty powerful to witness. The whole park was prepped for breast cancer awareness, from the pink jerseys, the pink decorations, and the community outreach. In addition to great baseball, there is fun to be had at the ballpark, from cornhole to an awesome kids' play area, complete with a pool and paddle boats. And I had a blast throwing out the first pitch. I was relieved that I couldn't throw it from the rubber since it's now a foot further back in the Atlantic League.
Next up, calling to the mound, James Christopher. Names of the military band, the two demands, German Shepherds, and the host of Let's Get to Podcast. All right, James, show us that on.
Not bad at all. Yep, Jess and I had a great time in Southern Maryland. The Blue Crabs are a class organization that put their community first, and we can't wait to get back.
Who's on first? The Let's Get To Local 9, brought to you by Zoomer Sport.
So we're excited to be joined by Jason Kemp. He is the director of media for one of the most iconic franchises in baseball, the Charleston River Dogs, and now championship. So are you the reason why first year as the full-time broadcaster and you're bringing home championship?
That's something I'm considering putting on my resume. A long time ago in Wichita, the team had made the championship 2 years in a row and lost. And I went there my first year as a full-time broadcaster and we won. And then here again, they had never won a championship under this franchise history. And in my first year, they won. So, if a minor league team wants to win a championship, and, you know, I'm certainly willing to do that for them. But I'm not sure I had too much to do with it this year.
We're going to get to the championship in a second and really just how unfair the Rays minor league system has been to all of baseball this year. But a little bit about you. How did you go from a kid that I presume liked baseball to now getting to be the voice of, again, one of the most recognizable and creative teams in the affiliated MILB?
It's certainly been a long and winding journey. I grew up in very small town Wisconsin listening to Bob Uecker and the Milwaukee Brewers back in the day. And he was certainly a guy that there was never a dull moment listening to him. And you can't really try and emulate somebody like that. You just kind of appreciate the way they call a game and some of the comedy aspects of what he does and incorporate that a little bit. But I wanted to play baseball. And I had a couple chances to play college ball, but decided, that wasn't going to be worth it in the long run. So I coached baseball while I was in college at my high school and then decided, hey, the school I went to, the University of Wisconsin Oshkosh, had a radio station and they broadcasted all the games. So I gave it a shot and it worked out. And I started as an intern under Sean Aronson, who's with the St. Paul Saints.
And we've had Sean on the show a couple times. Yeah.
Okay. Well, he's an entertaining guy to talk to, that's for sure. And so he taught me a lot about baseball, minor league baseball, and they were independent at the time, but also under this same ownership group, the Gold Clan Group owns Charleston. And so that's kind of how I got my foot in the door here about 8 years later. But I stopped in Wichita along the way, Dayton, Quad Cities, and then now ended up here in Charleston. And it's funny, when I was first out of college, I interviewed for three internships, Charleston, Quad Cities, and Dayton. And I took I took the St. Paul internship and ended up working for the other three at some point in my life. So it's kind of been a weird journey that way.
It's minor league baseball is funny that way. I actually want to deviate for a second, talk a little Wichita Wingnuts. We just did a big Wichita episode and we had Bob Lutz on the show, kind of the Wichita baseball expert. So what are some impressions of being in Wichita calling the Wingnuts?
Yeah, the stadium there, Lawrence Dumont Stadium, had a ton of history, and the NBC World Series is played there every year. It's a summer college ball tournament. It's that tournament where, like, they had the MLB Legends team a few years back. David Ross was playing. Nate Robertson owns the team, the former Tiger. And there's a lot of cool things there historically. The guys that have played there when they were in college, like Albert Pujols, just legends going back to the early 1900s. So it was a really cool experience. Their manager, Kevin Hooper, was now the infield coordinator for the Padres. Just one of the greatest guys I've met in baseball. And the cool thing about independent ball is you've got former big leaguers and guys who are just starting in professional baseball. So I got to work with Andy LaRoche was on our team 1 year there. We had a big league middle infield 1 year. It was a really cool place. And Bob's son, Jeff, was actually our beat writer with the Wichita Eagles. So I got to know them a little bit. And now they host a radio show in Wichita. But really enjoyed my time there. And now, of course, they have a double-A franchise. So hoping to visit Wichita again sometime.
And a beautiful new ballpark. We were there, like I said, about 3 weeks ago. It was gorgeous. Let's talk about Charleston. Then you get to Charleston. First impressions, both of the city and the community. Because what I love about them is, you know, as you said, indie ball, you kind of trying to win, and MILB, you're really running two operations, right? You're developing right. players, but you're putting on a fan experience. Before you got there, they were famous for a woman left a bad Yelp review. So they threw a theme night in her honor. Like, it was a whole thing. So just first impressions of just the kind of franchise you were walking into.
So like I said, I had interned with St. Paul. So I kind of knew the ownership's way of doing things and the focus on promotions and doing sort of wacky things. But I had heard about, you know, everybody that I talked to, I'm from Wisconsin. Nobody's vacationing where I'm from. Well, not very often anyways, but everybody was like, I've been to Charleston. I want to go back, or I'd love to live there. So I had very high expectations, and I hadn't really left the Midwest much except for Dayton, which is still very much Midwest, a little more Southern than Wisconsin. But this was my first journey to the South and to the East Coast. So I was really excited about being that close to the ocean. My wife had never seen the ocean before. And it was funny, we got here in February and I was here about 35 days and everything shut down. So if you know anything about minor league broadcasters, we don't do a heck of a lot else getting ready for the season. So I didn't have that experience. And then for a year, we were pretty much inside our house. So I kept hearing about all the great things to do in Charleston, the great fans, but never got to see it for about a year and a half. And then this year was my first. And so I'm still kind of winding down from the season. So I haven't been able to experience the city as much. But what I can say from the first season is, you know, the fans are incredible. There's an incredibly creative staff here. It was a little bit tougher to do the wacky promotions because you couldn't be on the field for part of the year this year. It was limited capacity at the beginning. But we had a toilet paper night where fans literally were handed a roll of toilet paper. And after the game, everybody TP'd the ballpark. Players were doing it. It was all over the net behind home plate. And we were just praying it didn't rain that night because it would have made cleanup a little bit more difficult. But I'm really looking forward to getting out in the community in Charleston during this offseason and actually get an experience. But everybody I've talked to and everything that I have seen, it's a great place. And I understand why people want to get down here.
And really good food. Like I said,
yeah, that's fair.
All the seafood you can eat. Let's talk a little bit about this season then. You know, we've covered them on the show. We're actually really good friends with the folks in Bowling Green, Sean, who's their play-by-play guy. And we had him on. Actually, we'll have him on later for our Halloween episode, but we recorded already. And just talking about the dominance that the Rays have built. And it really does remind me of like that 17 Astros when it was those guys that kind of worked their way up together. And then the Royals before that with just strong farm systems. Everybody, I think, but the Biscuits won and the Biscuits came in second. So how does that translate to, as far as fan excitement to actually get to see good players?
It's huge. And I think minor league baseball sometimes gets a rap. Like you said, there's two businesses going on. And during the regular season, a lot of times there's, you know, 50, 60, maybe 70% that when they were walking out of the ballpark, if you ask them whether the team won or not, they might not be able to tell you, right? They were there for the fireworks or the games between innings. But I was really impressed. And Charleston had a long losing history. They hadn't won a championship in the city since 1922, which I don't remember. And I doubt you do either. but nobody did, right? So they had never seen a pro baseball championship here. And once we got to the playoffs and it clinched a playoff spot, you could kind of feel a buzz starting in the city that in minor league baseball in my 9 years, I never felt before. You know, playoff games are oftentimes the toughest thing to sell because there aren't promotions planned already. You don't have anything set. And we had 5,000 just about every night. We had 6,000 for the first playoff game. And it was incredible to do and to call a playoff game that felt like a playoff game rather than, you know, a couple hundred people in the seats that really care about baseball. So I thought it was incredible. And we had been affiliated with the Yankees for a long time. And they actually, their team in Tampa, who would have been our affiliate if the shuffle didn't happen, ended up playing for the championship as well. So we would have been in a pretty good spot either way, whether we were still with the Yankees or with the Rays. But the Rays farm system, kind of getting back to your specific question, is incredible. And I've seen it from afar in teams we had to play against on teams I worked for previously. But to be a part of it was certainly an eye-opening experience.
It definitely feels like, as again, I'm very Houston-centric with my professional fandom, and it seems like Astros and Rays might be locking horns for the next few years in the AL. So sorry to my Yankees and Red Sox fans. Actually, I'm not. I'm totally good with that.
No, that's all right.
Yeah. So let's talk about your last call then. I mean, so I'm a very in my head person. At what point did you start thinking about, okay, if I'm going to call a championship, it's going to be something that's going to be cemented, or did you sort of let it go and what came out was natural?
So I've always been under the impression, and this goes back to what Sean taught me and what I've just learned over the years, is like, you can't have, every time Jim Nance has a big call, it's always like, did he script that? Did he not? And so it's hard to be, I think it takes away from some of the originality and like the passion of the moment if you have it scripted ahead of time. So I obviously had thought about what it means and what kind of points I wanted to hit on or what I wanted to mention in the short aftermath of them actually winning, if they did. And we were up 2-0, and I sort of let those thoughts creep into my head. And then Down East came back and won the next two, and I'm like, this would be such a waste. But we were finally able to kind of pull away in Game 5, the decisive game. So we were up, you know, 9-2 in the middle innings. And so you start thinking in your head, like soaking in the moment, and what exactly am I going to say? But to say I had it scripted would not be true, but I did kind of start to think about, I need to mention that this is the first time in franchise history and the first time in 99 years for the city. But I definitely didn't want to have the words written down or laid out in front of me.
Yeah. I was thinking about at least because again, you were up 9-2. So you can start to think about it, but if it's a walk-off, how do you just not go, holy crap?
Yeah. That would be the toughest thing actually, is to try and wrap up all of your thoughts and the excitement of the final play. While also, you know, one thing I've always been taught is make sure you say what needs to be said and then let people hear the crowd. So I was trying to say what I needed to and then just kind of lay back. And because we had 5,000 people here, there was noise that was in the background. So I wanted to kind of give that feel of what was going on around the ballpark at the same time.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're definitely right. It's very like Jack Buck, Vin Scully, if you let the crowd do its thing and just color it in. All right, so we're going to have some fun rapid fire questions, Jason. So prepare to be intellectually nimble. Hot dogs or brats?
Brats.
Superman or Batman?
Superman.
Yeah, people that say Batman, I'm like, do you understand what that means? Okay, cool. Right. All right. Strangest thing that you've ever seen at a ballpark?
Boy, that's... So our stadium in Quad Cities got flooded 2 years ago in Iowa. The Mississippi flooded. We were on the road for a month and a half. And our staff was riding in the bucket of like a bulldozer or like a skid steer in the bucket to get into the stadium. So we had to climb into the bucket. It lifted you up and then it drove through the flood waters to drop you off on a platform in front of the stadium. So to see that was pretty odd. And then later that day, the train was going through the flood water and there was a duck swimming in front of the train. And I'd never seen that before.
That's nuts. Okay. Yeah. You might actually win for craziest thing that anybody's seen on the show so far. What is your favorite baseball uniform?
Well, man, I love the, being from Wisconsin, I love the Milwaukee Brewers new look with the ball and glove, the light blue and the yellow. But the Astros throwback is also pretty sick. Quad Cities did a spinoff of those orange and kind of creamsicle uniforms. That's a close second.
I collect anytime a team comes up with a variant of that, I get it. It's getting bad. I think I have like 15 versions of it. Like I have the, when the Woodpeckers joined, they did with black and red, and
yep,
I've got that one. All right. Godfather 1 or 2.
Honestly, I've never seen them, believe it or not. So I'm going to say 1, but yeah, I've got a lot of work to do in terms of the movie department. I'm sorry.
Okay. All right. We'll move on though. It's okay. If you could own one team that's not your favorite team, which team would you own and why?
Baseball specific? No. Man, that's a great question. I have an idea. I want to own a hockey team, and it would be the Phoenix team in the NHL, the Arizona franchise, and they stole this idea in the commercial with the Walrus. But I would cut everyone, buy the cheapest team, and then find the largest human being in the world, put him in goal. And so the other team couldn't score. And we'd win, and then I'd sell the team for more. So whatever the cheapest NHL franchise is.
All right, I love that. I love that. Star Wars or Jaws?
Star Wars.
Okay.
I have seen that.
Good. What would you pick for your last meal on Earth?
Steak and cheesy potatoes.
Okay. Would you have that meal with The Office's Michael Scott or Parks and Rec's Leslie Knope?
I think Michael Scott for sure.
Okay. When was the first time that baseball broke your heart?
Boy, honestly, I think it was when Josh Hader blew the save in the wild card game, leading to the Nationals winning the World Series, because I thought that one was over and it just didn't go right. And I thought that team had a chance to do something special.
Yeah, that broke my heart too, Jason. So appreciate that.
yeah, no problem.
And if not baseball, what other sport would you work in?
I think football. Football is, I played football in high school, and there's just something about Friday nights, Saturdays, and Sundays that are special.
All right, great. Well, he is Jason Kempf. He is the voice of your Charleston River Dogs. Again, congratulations on the championship, and congrats on the impending nuptials, which might have already happened by the time this episode drops.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much. It's the year of the ring, I guess, is what I've been told by several people.
I love that. That's now the title of the episode. Thank you so much. Perfect. And well, hopefully we'll be out there next year to see you guys live and in person.
Sounds good. Look forward to it. Thanks.
And now on to close it out, the right-hander from Houston, Texas, James Christopher.
So that does wrap up this episode of Let's Get To. And again, a hearty happy Hanukkah from our family, our Let's Get To family, to yours if you celebrate. We will be back in a short amount of time because our Christmas episode's coming up, including a visit from Baseball Santa. So if you haven't gotten your wish list into Baseball Santa, make sure you email me and we'll get those videos included. So until next time, everyone have a great winter as we start to settle into the holidays and things are getting a little chilly outside. Watch some good movies and let's get to it.